Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, boo. Welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him. He's everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me in welcoming my granddaddy, Baba Jahi?
Well, well, well. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon to our 47,255 listeners out there in Blog Talk Radio land. We truly thank you for tuning in to a show here on Home-Based Business 101, truly making this listener-supported radio. And as I come on here each time, I like to always thank my grandson, Isaiah, for the warm, wonderful introduction that he gives me for bringing on this show. And, you know, we're just so thankful. We're so grateful. We're thankful, one, for being blessed to have another day, to be able to wake up and see another day and face with all the challenges that it might bring, all the joy that it might bring. We don't know. We can't say. But I do know that if we pray and thank our Creator for giving us another day, that we will be able to make it through that day. So today's show is the National Black Unity News Radio Show with the publisher of the National Black Unity Newspaper, Mr. David Murphy. We're going to get that show started here in a second. I want to do those read from Dennis Kimbrough's book, Daily Motivations for African American Success, October 28th, The Juice Man. A river can rise beyond its source when it's in the seed. What's in the seed determines the fruit. T.M. Alexandra, entrepreneur. Here goes the reading for the day. There was a strong man who traveled with the circus. One of his more memorable stunts was to take a lemon and squeeze every last drop of juice out of it. He would then turn over $1,000 to anyone who could manage to squeeze as much as one individual drop from the fruit. He boasted about his feat from city to city, but no one was able to win the money. One day he came to a small town and pitched his offer. A small, frail woman stepped forward and accepted the challenge. She took the crushed lemon and squeezed several drops of juice from it. The man couldn't believe his eyes. "How did you do it?" he asked. The woman shrugged and said, "My husband has been out of work for nearly a year. I do this all the time." When it comes to pushing ahead and using our talent, we must squeeze out every drop. When presented with the heroic challenge of carving out a better life, many have faced barriers, have managed to squeeze every drop from their ability. Think of how Marian Anderson became the first African American to perform at New York Metropolitan Opera House. Charles Drew perfected blood plasma. John Baptiste Saul established Chicago. Jackie Robinson shattered baseball's color line. Richard Allen founded the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Phyllis Wheatley became the first African American poet. Garrett Morgan created the traffic signal. Millie E. Hale built one of the first black hospitals in the country. Wild Bill Pickett became the king of the rodeo, and Crispus Attucks was the first man to die defending our nation's freedom during the Revolutionary War. These men and women exemplified the best that it is in us. One time and place, our time and place is now, and we have the opportunity to do all of the pioneering we ever dreamed of. As in all other times, we need our courage and determination to squeeze out every last drop. I will use all of my untapped abilities. That is the reading today from Dennis Kimbrough's Daily Motivations for African American Success. And, I mean, what a powerful, powerful story. The woman said she was, the man asked her how she was able to squeeze those drops of lemon juice out of there, which no one had ever been able to do before because he had always managed to seem to squeeze every drop out. And she says, "My husband's been out of work for a year. I do this all the time." So, you know, she really needed that $1,000, and she found what it took to be able to squeeze out couple more drops of lemon juice out of that lemon. So make sure that you, as you push your head, using your talent, we must squeeze out every drop, you know. And again, when presented with this heroic challenge of carving out a better life, many have faced barriers that manage to squeeze every drop from their ability. We want to make sure we keep that in mind. And with that also, you know, we have this show is brought to you by The Vortex. So what is The Vortex? The Vortex is a consumer booking engine that allows you, just like the lady squeezing the lemon, to be able to squeeze every drop of savings, travel bookings, and destinations to save you 85% to 90% of the time on your travel bookings, but to give you a better deal, a better deal. So you want to make sure that you go to www.myvortex, V-O-R-T-E-X, 365.com/MU Group and create your free account. Again, this is a free account. We give you this account for free to allow you to save money. And so, you know, we're out here doing the best of our abilities to be able to bring savings to people each and every day. And, you know, we're thankful to God for the opportunity to be able to bless so many people. So far, we've been able to bless over 54 people with their very own booking engine. We're thankful for that. We're also thankful for the opportunity that we presented in the latest issue of the National Black Community News. And I got a call this morning from someone that wanted to take us up on becoming a travel intern, from travel intern to travel agent, in which they would be giving away our Vortex link. And when they do, we're going to give them 85% of what we earn on that link, keeping 15% to cover payroll and making sure that we can cover the stuff for their payroll and getting that 1099 for them at the end of the year for the monies that they earn and just being able to take care of the in-house accounting. And so we want to keep 15% of the proceeds that are generated, push and market the Vortex. So we're very, very excited about being able to share this opportunity with so many people out there. And, you know, again, if you need more information, just give me a call, 252-458-3712. 252-458-3712 and ask for Baba Jahi, and we will hook you up. Now, with all of that being said, let me go to our line and make sure that Mr. David Murphy has joined us. Mr. Murphy, are you there? Hello, Mr. Murphy, are you there? I see you on the switchboard. I'll try one more time. Mr. Murphy, are you there?
Tawi.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, yes. I was trying to chime in, but you was, I guess. But in any case, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How'd your show go yesterday? I wanted to get on there, and time got away from me, and I was out and about, and by the time I got back in, it was past the time that the show that you was on, you know, that was coming on, but, you know, we'll do what we got to do today, so.
Yeah, yes, it went very well, the host of the show, paid me some very nice tribute and said that was probably one of his best shows that he's done. So, you know, thank God for that. But, keep it in line with your theory, you know, those limits, a powerful concept, a powerful words of inspiration. And, words, as I always often say, are so powerful. And, you know, God spoke through words, and he brought everything into existence. And just fortunately enough for me, I'm in the word business. You know, through the publication, words come in a variety of forms. But it is written that it does not come back void. And so that scenario of the limits are powerful. But, you know, I always been inspired by words. Even in my most troubling times, you know, I would use songs or listen to music or something like that because it's some words just so powerful and so soothing. And when you was reading those words, you know, it took me back to one of my most powerful songs, lyrics to a song that encourages me, and I'd like to share that with you. And it's called The Impossible Dream. I think these words are so significant and so powerful, especially in my life. And it goes like this. They say, to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will be peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star, to fight the unfightable foe, to dream the impossible dream. You know, especially this part where it's a man is willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. You know, it says volumes to me personally, because in life, as you say, often give you lemons. And most of the time we have been squeezed to capacity sometimes, at least though we think we have been. But it takes that last ounce of courage, that strength, that willing to go, you know, no matter how far. And that lady that you spoke about, because of her hardships, she had to squeeze a little harder than the average person did. And therefore, she was accustomed to those type of pressures in life. And so when this man came along, it was just a normal thing for her. But regardless, because she had done so deep, she was able to survive and win some money. But in any case, you know, Brother Satavi, it's a wonderful day. And like I said, words do not come back void. And I hope and I pray that your words, my words, and words of encouragement reach out to someone and help someone, because every now and then we all need a word. And I thank God for these airways, because you and I right now are sharing our words with a listening audience. And I encourage the listening audience, you know, to participate with this program, and participate with the Vortex. Excuse me, and participate with the National Black Unity News. And today, I'm just a blessed man, because a lot of things, you know, has happened recently, and it just, you know, a reminder. A year ago today, I was at St. Joseph's Hospital in the intensive care unit. Just had open heart surgery a couple of days ago. I'm talking about a year ago now. And I was in pretty bad shape, drugged up, you know, chest was been split open, and all kinds of stuff was going on. And here it is a year later, and I'm still here. I often tell I'm still standing, and I'm still putting in work, and I'm still being used. So, you know, I got to give honor to God for his grace and his mercy. But what a difference a day make as well. Yesterday is gone. Today is right here. No matter what happened to you, yesterday's. you know, you do not dwell in the past. You know, you can go back there and visit and learn from it, but don't live there. You know, this is a brand new moment, a brand new day. And if you do make your day better and you put in the work today, your tomorrows would be better. And I often call myself a servant of servants. And so I'm going to stay true to my calling today. I know my brother Satawi Jahi is a very gracious man, a hard-working man, a man who had paid his dues and continued to pay him. But I'm going to flip the script today. I'm going to interview you, sir, and because I think it's extremely important. You come on these airways and you mention a few things about the vortex, and you mention a few things that some of the things that you're doing, but you're always encouraging people. But see, sometimes you hear the words, but sometimes you need to know the person behind those words. And I want to share a little bit about what I know about the brother Jahi, Satawi Jahi, who was the host of this show. Many years ago, I don't even remember the year, but I know it's well over 20-something. And the brother lived in, and we lived in the same area, the Edmonton Village area, Baltimore City. And I don't know what I was doing in the particular time, how I met him, but I know I came to their home one day. I don't know how I made the arrangement to come there, or I may have seen a flyer about something they was doing, but I was always at that particular time traveling all over the city looking for black businesses and services to put in my newspaper, which was called the Informer newspaper at the time. And I came across Brother Satawi Jahi and his wife Cynthia. And they invited me into their home / youth center. And I watched this brother and this sister put in the work with these young people, how dedicated they were. And they didn't have to open their mouth because they actually lived in this house. And they took the entire downstairs and turned it into a youth center. And I said, ain't that dedication, you know? And then once I got to know them, I did an article on them in the newspaper. And then once I got to know them, I was so impressed and so inspired by their level of dedication, their level of commitment with young people. And I was so inspired that once I met them, I even had my two children, go to their rec center. And they took extremely good care of them. And I'm going to just say this. I'm going to give you an example of what kind of care they gave. Now, I have a son, David Murphy Jr. And it was, you know, and because I was always doing a newspaper and my wife always worked, and so we always had to have a babysitter. And it was an extremely difficult task for me to leave him here and there, because I used to carry him to various people, some relatives, some people we had, and he didn't like those places. He didn't want me to leave him anywhere, and it was hard on me. It hurts, you know, see my son crying, and you know, because he was only about 2 or 3 years old at the time, or something like that. But in any case, I had to hide and sneak out of the place to get away from him, and it would bother me most of that day until I came back and got him. But in any case, so one day after meeting the Jahis, they had a summer camp during this time. And they had children from various age groups, I think from around, you know, the younger they can get, all the way up to about 13, 14, 15, 16, probably. Some may have been older than that. But in any case, I took my son up there for a day or two. I had to do the same thing, try to get away from him. But he had his older sister with him this time, so that made a difference a little bit. But then a few days later, I dropped him off there. The young man didn't even look back at him. He just ran on and started playing. I was saying, and to me, that says volume, because the people that used to watch him was his family members, people who knew him all his life and stuff, and he had a difficult time. He just met these people, and he loved the place up there. He loved it, you know, and so, you know, that to me, that says volumes about the love and care that the Jahis have for youth. And they had a program called I think it's called Unlimited, Youth Unlimited. I forgot the name of the thing. I'm getting old now, but he explained it to me. Movements Unlimited, it was called. And I said, and from that time on, we had worked together. We had put on events together. And we even started a youth program together, marketing the Informer newspaper. We would train young people to go out and market the newspapers, and the program was extremely successful, except for some of the adults, because at that particular time, children were making extremely good money, but we didn't want them out there making that kind of money unsupervised by the adult. And was on a commission type basis, so without the adult supervision, we wouldn't allow the children because they could have got hurt or snatched or something, and we couldn't afford to have that happen. But in any case, over the years, they had always put an insert in the Informer. When the Informer ran, they always had an insert, and I watched them evolve as much as they watched me evolve. And I want you, the listening audience, because like I said, I know they come on here and talk about travel and talk about the vortex, but I want to take you a little deeper today. So, Brother Satari, are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you a few questions, sir. When I first met you, you had this concept called Movements Unlimited, and I know you had some dance and stuff in it. Could you explain the purpose of Movements Unlimited for me, please?
Yes, Movements Unlimited is a 501c3 that we have. When I first met my wife, she was working at Social Security, and she used to come home almost every day complaining about the job. But on the weekends, she used to have all of these children at her apartment at 595A Yale Avenue. And part of going through the dating process, I used to have to sit and watch the children rehearse. You know, that was, you know, her, you know, us making our connection. And I never forget, one day she came home, you know, and she had really had it that day, you know. And I said, you know what? I said, that job you go to every day, I say, you know, it ain't satisfying your spirit. I said, you know, you can quit that job. We hadn't even gotten married yet. And so, you know, she said, I can quit my job. I said, yeah, you can quit your job. I said, because your passion is these children. I said, and what we can do, I said, you know, we can turn it into a nonprofit corporation, Movements Unlimited. But that was the name she was going by at that time. She had that name since 1974. We met in 1986. But it was a hobby. And so I helped her turn her hobby and her passion into a business. So what we did with that, we had a dance component, because that's what she was doing at the time, dance and theater. And once we got started with that, then part of the thing was happening was when children would come, you know, they was in school, they needed help with their homework. And so from that, that led from doing things with the children after school to summer programs and summer development. And then we met in 86. 1990, we became a 501c3. By that time, we was working out of 626 Wildwood Park, where my grandfather had passed, and my parents left me his house. And so we were there for several years. But we was across the street from Lyndhurst Elementary. And on that journey, my wife met Mr. Linwood Roberts, who's also an ancestor now at this point. And, you know, he allowed us to bring the program to his school. And when we went to the school, again, you know, her whole concept was she knew she needed to charge something. But we said, you know, I don't know which one of us came up with the price of it being a dollar. She said, you know, these children don't have a lot of money. And so she said, let's just charge them a dollar. You know, she said, just so that they know that they pay a dollar when they come to dance class. And so, you know, she started off with the Lyndhurst dances, which became part of our initial program in terms of Movements Unlimited. She had over 60 children who were part of that program that would meet after school, whatever, in terms of dancing and stuff, and you know, and doing what they needed to do to be a part of the program that we had. We later on found out that some of the children, what they would do, some of them sometimes they didn't have their dollar, and so they had other children that was in the program that would pay their dollar for them, and because of the love of what was being done. And so we didn't find that out till later. But anyway, you know, we had that program going on, and like I said, then there was the after-school component. And I'm trying to remember what year we did our first summer camp. We did our first summer camp out of our house on 626 Wildwood Parkway. And I'll never forget, you know, with our summer camp, I had even set up inside our living room like a mini tennis court where children would, you know, would come, and because I played tennis. Sometimes we couldn't get up to Edmondson or, you know, to get up to Edmondson where the tennis courts were. That we had, we used some Nerf balls and some other things and some small tennis rackets, but exposed children to the game of tennis. And that, you know, became a very powerful component of what we did during the summer. We used to take them to the Walters Art Gallery. You know, people would see us get on the bus with all of these children. I never forget one time getting on the bus, and one of the bus drivers who knew what we was doing with these children, you know, he was searching for something. He said, I know it's in here somewhere. You know, he was looking for something, and then he found it, and he reached over to shake my hand. When I opened up my hand, when I got to my feet, I opened up my hand, it was a $100 bill. He said, you know, my brother, I'm going to give you this donation. He says, because this man, what you're doing is good. Because our children were always ordered. Because, you know, we taught them stuff that, you know, hey, when we go places, you know, make sure that you respect where we're going, respect the people that you meet, people that you see, because the T-shirt you got on says Movements Unlimited. Our name is on that T-shirt. And all we ask you to do is, I used to tell them, say, you know, my father used to tell me, he says, you know, when you go somewhere, he said, people know you by your family name, and make sure that whenever you go somewhere that you honor that name, because he says you don't want to put out a bad reputation. He says you to haunt you. But anyway, that's, you know, how we got started, and as we evolved into the mayor. Kurt Smoke was the mayor of Baltimore City. He had an initiative, and that initiative was he wanted to cut back on crime. So one of the ways to cut back on crime was that he was going to give away 5 recreation centers to community-based nonprofit organizations. And so he designated the Ridenour Heights Culture Center as Ridenour Heights Recreation Center as one of the centers that he was going to, you know, give away to the community, to anyone that had a 501c3 nonprofit corporation that qualified to be able to run that center. I never forget, you know, meeting with the people from the community, and I remember it was Miss Betty Martin. She had an organization, and she was like, "No, we need to make the city, you know, we need to make them find money in the budget so they can keep the building open." To Miss Martin, I said, they don't want to keep the building open. I said, because if they keep the building open, I mean, you know, they got employees, they got to pay those employees, they got to pay for the overhead of the building. I said, you know, and all of those kind of things. I said, the city does not want to do that. They want to outsource. And at times, people didn't know what that really meant. And then people's like, well, you know, you got to be able to respond to this RFP, request for proposal. I said, Ms. Martin, and I told the other people in the room, I said, you know, look, I said, when we went to college, I said, you know, even though the instructor gave us all semester to get our term papers in, and I understand, you know, we got like less than 2 weeks to get this RFP in. I said, but all it really is a glorified term paper. I said, you know, and we used to wait to the end of the semester to stay up almost all night getting our term papers in, you know. And I said, you know, I did pretty good at that. I said, you know, some of them I turned in at times, you know, I got an A or I got a B on. I said, I never got less than a C. I said, so, you know, if I'm able to do a B proposal, I said, more than likely we'll get funded. We competed against 14 other organizations who had money. At the time, we had $35. I didn't tell anybody that at the time. That's what we had. We had $35. We outbeat over 14 different organizations, some of them churches, a couple mosques, and other organizations. But the mayor, what he was looking at, he wanted a holistic program that was not going to be based on you going to a certain church and only people that's going to benefit from that program was the church. He wanted a program that was going to benefit the community. And so, you know, that started our journey into the Ridenau Heights community. And, you know, we went through a lot of trials and tribulations going through that. One was, you know, now we were no longer operating out of our house. We was operating out of a building. I'll never forget the first candy drive we had. And the children from the community came in, stole my keys, stole the candy. And everything, we had an M&M drive going on. They stole, and then I'm walking down the street later on, they laughing at me. We got them M&Ms, you know. It was like, okay, all right. So, but these were children that were not part of our core group of children that we had started off working with. And so, you know, so we learned a lot of lessons over time, you know. But we also, we went on to employ people in the community. We went on to create a youth internship program, and, you know, that's sort of what inspired me to do the internship program that we got going on now. We did a program with Joe Corby's Pizza where we had children selling pizzas. When they would sell pizzas, we would pay them, we call compensation and deferred compensation. Their compensation was they got $2 out of the $5.50 each pizza kit that was sold and $1 for a deferred compensation in terms of a savings bond. And, you know, we set that up through Advance Bank, where we had, I'm trying to remember the brother's name now, who was the manager of that bank over in Walbrook Junction. But anyway, yeah, we set it up through Advance Bank. And so every time a child sold 25 kits, they made $50, and then they got a $50 savings bond. And, you know, and that caught on because some of the parents, you know, we had to charge fees. Some of them, you know, they would be struggling at times to pay their fees. But through our compensation program that we had set up for the youth, some of the parents was able to sell enough pizza kits to pay their weekly fees and also for their child to earn a deferred compensation in terms of $50 savings bond. One of the reasons we did the $50 savings bond was because inevitably we had some parents who, come to things that they'd be struggling with at times, you know, they'd help their child sell the pizza kits, but then they'd keep the money. But see, there was no way he was going to be able to keep that savings bond because it was in the child's name. It was the beneficiary on the savings bond, but the beneficiary, you know, they wouldn't be able to cash it or anything like that. We had one child, his name was, I remember Anthony's last name is now. But anyway, we had a child named Anthony who ended up with over $20, $50 savings bonds during the course of that program that he was able to cash in on once he turned 18. So, you know, so we did a lot. We had a play that really launched us in the community called Black Butterfly Don't Do Drugs. We did that play over at Dunbar High School. We started off doing it as a traveling play around the city in terms of different schools. The cast was made up of children from the neighborhood, and first place we did it at was Harlem Plot Middle School. Then we did it at Lyndhurst, did it at Ridenau Heights. It's Lyndhurst Elementary, Ridenau Heights Elementary. And trying to remember where else we did it at. We also did it at one point. At that time, we had our culture center. We did it at our center. But the height of doing the play came when we did it at Dunbar in front of over 500 people that attended the play. And, you know, and it was people. Or we did also did it at the Baltimore City Fair. Because I remember we did it at the Baltimore City Fair. You know, the characters in the play changed at times, but it was the play centered around a person who was a drug dealer who was selling drugs in the neighborhood. And, you know, we had lines in the play that went like, you know, we had a community leader in the play who confronted the drug dealer. And then we had a community activist in the play that confronted the drug dealer. Then we had several children in the play and had a playground scene, which I'm still in touch with some of those children that was in the play. Stephen Grant was one of the children in the play who was persuaded to take these drugs, and the community leader came across him and another young girl later on who were high on the dope, and, you know, and they were stumbling and bumbling. And the children, they really did get deep into the characters and acted them out very well and all of that. And so that, you know, that was a good experience in terms of going do all of that. But, you know, to make a long story short, you know, we contributed a lot to the community. We hired people in the community. You know, the people in the community that we hired were right from the community, right from Emerson Village. And we gave them summer jobs. We had people that always could compete for summer jobs. I never forget one summer we had a young man who, Ronald Fitzgerald, who applied for the youth summer job program. He got assigned to another program, another center. I never forget. I went to that center. My wife said, "What you going to do?" Ronald, he wanted to work here, but they signed him over to such and such place. I went to that place. I talked to the supervisor over there. I picked up his time card. Explain, you know, I say, Ronald been looking forward to working in our summer camp. And I said, that's what, you know, because he was a student in the program. I'll never forget, my wife met him when he was like 11 or 12, and he was going to West Baltimore Middle School. He got jumped on his way going to school one day. And so he got jumped, and, you know, he had this thing that him and these young girls were doing. They had this dance routine that they were doing. And so they auditioned for my wife for the dance and theater program. And from that, Ronald went on to the Baltimore School for the Arts, because my wife used to take children from her program and would take them down to the Baltimore School for the Arts and have them audition each year. And, you know, we had several students who made it through the Baltimore School for the Arts. Our daughter was one. She, you know, made it to graduated from Baltimore School for the Arts. We had Ronald graduated. Another child, Jamel Brunson, who graduated from Baltimore School for the Arts. So, you know, almost every child that my wife assisted to go to the Baltimore School for the Arts made it in the Baltimore School for the Arts. And actually went on to do some real good things. So, you know, it's a long story. I'm trying to condense it as much as I can, but, you know, as me and my wife always, you know, share that that's a book that we got to write.
Yeah, and guess Wilson what? You know, but I recall, you know, my son and daughter used to come home, and they would always come home with certain quotes, and they would always come home, especially one song I'd never forget. And they say, red, black, yellow, green, I know what these colors mean. You know, they would just go on and on. They were so proud. But what kind of, when you had these daycares and the Robin House Community Cultural Center, what kind of curriculum did you have? What was you teaching these children outside of dance?
Outside of dance, we had for the youth interns, we had two books that they had to read. One was Juan Zhu Kung Fu's book, motivating black youth to business success. And then other book we had was Introduction to Black Studies by Dr. Marlana Karinga. And, you know, we designed the curriculum around those books. And the thing is interesting is youth can give you energy. I mean, they give you energy because they come in, you know, they're excited about what's going on, and, you know, they're going to have 1,000 questions. And you go through, you know, we would go through the books. The other book we used was Think and Grow Rich and Black Choice by Dennis Kimbrough. And we had a chance to meet Dennis Kimbrough one night when he was lecturing at Woodlawn High School. And I'll never forget, it was snowing that night. And, you know, we found a way to get there with our staff at the time, which was Brother Happy, who lived in the village, Miss Sapperton, who also lived, she lived in Uplands at the time, and two other people, Melvina Dowdy, who lived on Melvina lived on Rokeby Road, and then we had another young lady who was our Swahili instructor, who was from Kenya. And so, you know, to answer your question in terms of curriculum, is that we used an Afrocentric curriculum in which children, they learn history, science, mathematics, and cultural arts. So that was, you know, that was the core part of our curriculum that we had in terms of inspiring the youth to just be able to, one was to know your ancestors, know where you came from. You know, and also we had the youth, we introduced them to the African American holiday of Kwanzaa, which, you know, was a deeply rich cultural holiday that taught the seven principles. And we had a piece that we used to do every day when the children would come. We had what was called a unity circle, and in the unity circle we start off with one. Children giving thanks, you know, because we had to tell the children, say, you know, this is not about any particular religion, but I say, when you wake up every morning and when you come here, I want you to name at least one thing you're thankful for, you know. So the children would get into that and talk about what they was thankful for the day, what they was thankful for, you know. And a lot of times it's something around, I'm thankful to be alive, I'm thankful for my mother and father. You know, things like that. Or thankful for that we got a good grade today in school. I never forget, we had one young man one time, you know, we were doing the unity circle, and so he was like, his name was Dwayne. He was just like, you know, he was big for his age, and so I used to tell him that, you know, when he first came to us, you know, he always would be getting into fights in school, but we helped him to transform his life. And I'll never forget, on this one particular day, he came, he said, yeah, Mr. Jahi, he said, you know, somebody tried to provoke me today. He said, I told him, I said, you lucky. He said, the older Wayne would kick your ass. He said, but I'm a person. So, you know, and that, you know, I mean, his mother was very, very thankful for all that we did, you know, with her two boys, which was him and his younger brother. I never forget also one day, you know, he was having a bad day, and what his son around was right after the Christmas holiday, sending around the fact that his father was in jail, but his younger brother's father, you know, was not in jail. His younger brother's father had brought his younger brother all of these gifts, and he had no gifts. And so, you know, he had an attitude, you know what I mean? That was the old Dwayne, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it helped us get him through some things. I'll never forget, I told Mr. Brother Happy at the time, I said, man, I don't know what's going on with Dwayne today. Man, take him outside for a walk, man. Find out what the problem is and calm him down, you know, because, you know, the thing is that we didn't have the issues that schools have where if you have a child go off, we find a way to help calm them down and get them through whatever it is that they was going through. So that was, you know, a good, I guess you might say, coping strategy or our counseling strategy or whatever it was. But, I mean, you know, all of these different things is tools and techniques for how do you run a youth-based organization.
Let me say this to you. I know time is getting near, but like I say, you know, I've been around you and your wife for some time now, and I know you, you know, various circumstances. You had moved to New Orleans, and then you just recently came back from North Carolina. And but you've always been active in so many different areas. See, what my thing is this. I know you do taxes, and you still teach, you do travel, you do a variety of things. But when people, like I say, sometimes don't understand, you know, that's just part of your journey, and you traveled a lot of miles in your journey. And but what I want people to really understand is the man behind these airways. And I just want you to reflect back, because remember I was saying words are powerful. You started off with some words, and like I said, you started off with squeezing lemons, and I was talking about marching into hell for a heavenly cause. But on hindsight, when you look back over your life and look back at the journey that you traveled, and you and I talk about this every once in a while. You know, like I say, you know, we've been around for some time now. And you know, sometimes it seems like it's unrewarded. But then if you really look at it, you see so many fruits of your labor. And like I said, I recall the time, you know, I mentioned this on air, when you and I gave that dinner that day at Murray Rahman Recreation Center. And the young lady called into this radio station said that same day she was talking about contemplating suicide. And because I don't know if you said something or Barbara Robinson said, or I said something, but it was you and I who actually started it, you know, to put that event on. And this young lady stopped the nonsense of taking her life. And then at that time she called into the radio station. She had just graduated from college, and she was giving us thanks because of the services we provided that day. And I know all of those children, all of those, even my children that you have interacted with. Can you just share a few stories or something that, you know, years later when you came across some of your students, some of the accolades that they gave you?
Well, let's start with Stephanie Williams, who, Stephanie's last name was. But anyway, some lady named Stephanie, who was, she started off as a volunteer in our program, worked her way to become a youth intern, and through that, she went on to go to Morgan State University, graduated from there, went back to Morgan State University, and got her master's degree in social work. But she wanted to go to HBCU because of the things that she had learned at the Culture Center. And she's always thankful for the things that we inspired her to do and participate in. And so, you know, that's one. Alicia Williams, who's all the way over in China right now. She's in Shanghai, China. And, you know, she got married. She's working on a doctorate degree, to an extension program at the University of Southern California, you know, and looking to be able to complete that. And then, you know, we have some children who didn't necessarily go that far in life, made it out of the neighborhood, working a job, taking care of the mother, taking care of the mother of his children, who he married. His name is Michael Wesley. And I never forget, you know, I was talking to him one time, and I said, you know, Mike, I said, you know, you grown up to do some very good things. He said, Mr. Jahi, I ain't go to college, I ain't do that, I ain't do this. I said, but you married your daughters, you married your two daughters' mother. I said, you put some dignity in her life. I said, you know, she didn't have to look at herself, or her family had to look at herself as like, Yeah, she got pregnant by Mike, and, you know, he ain't married her, he ain't working nowhere. I said, you know, you went out. I said, you got her pregnant. I said, you went on. So you dropped out of school, you got your GED, you went to work, and you're providing for that family. I said, you know, that's very, very good. I'll never forget, one time we met another youth at the Million Family March, and this young man, I can't remember his name now, but anyway, I never forget him because he wasn't in our program, but he hung around the students that was in the program, and so they had a rub off on him. And he used to always carry a big old butcher knife because, you know, at age of 12, he was out there slinging and blinging. You know, he was out there selling drugs, involved in crack cocaine trade. Ran into him later on in life at the Million Family March. You know, and he had his wife with him, and he's pushing the stroller, you know, and he comes up and he says, "Oh, I want you to meet my former dance instructor," you know. And, you know, we weren't his dance instructors, but, you know, he used to hang around other children in the program. And so, you know, he wanted to take credit for being in the program. And, you know, we didn't embarrass him or nothing like that, you know, said, okay. Yeah, we complimented him. But it was good to see that he had turned his life around and was, you know, was doing positive things in the community in terms of the one man, his girlfriend. Also, we have another young man who caught up with later on who is singing Italian opera. And, you know, and had been to Italy, and, you know, just and the list goes on and on and on, because, you know, that's just a few of the children. There's so many. My wife ran into the other day, her and sister-in-law had to take their mom in for a hospital visit, ran into a former student that was a dancer of hers back from the days when we was at 5948 Yale Avenue, and talked to her. You know, she met her, glad to see her. And naturally, when the children run into us, they recognize us. Even though they're adults now, they recognize us immediately. And so, you know, it's just really good in terms of going through those experiences and being able to see, you know, how they turned out in life and the good things that they're doing. We have another young man, Cheo, who, you know, he ran into me and my wife at Security Square Mall one day, recognized us immediately, exchanged numbers, see how he was doing. And, you know, it was just very good when you run into youth who's come through your program, and they don't have no harsh words. They don't have, you know, they have the utmost respect for us now as they had then. And so that's always good.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this to you. And the reason why I asked you those different questions, because I wanted people to know not only who you are, but see, this is, you know, getting back to what I do, the National Black Unity News. See, I just wanted to bring home a point that the people that participate in the National Black Unity News, you know, they have a travel section in our publication, but it's more, so much more. Not with the Jahis, but so many other people that participated in the paper has such an extensive background of caring and shared over a multitude of years. And so, brother, you know, the time is upon us. You know, I just want to give a shout-out to you and your wife because, you know, with much love and respect because I've known firsthand and I've seen the work that you put in. And I appreciate you for it. And I appreciate your wife for the work, you know. And I just wanted to let your listener audience know that it's more to the man than just coming on his airways and you talking about a great program of traveling, vortexes, and things like that, because you have, how do young people say, you have put in some work over the years and you continue to do so. You're still on the front lines. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give a shout-out to the National Black Unity News because it's people like the Jaheed that make this publication what it is. And if you ever want to get a copy of this, and which you should, get a copy of the National Black Unity News, you can subscribe to us. You can call 443-455-2373, or you can go to our website, www.thenationalblackunitynews.com. Back to you, sir.
All right, Mr. Murphy, I want to thank you for being on these airways today, and we're going to close out with our theme song called It's My Time, and we just want to thank you for, you know, being on here, sharing what it is that you had to share, and again, thank you for that gracious interview. You know, I tried to share as much as I could, you know, and like I said, that interview needs to turn into ultimately a book. So me and my wife will be working on that as soon as we can and start working on that, documenting the road we've traveled and the journey that we've been. So with that said, to the listening audience out there, we want to thank y'all for tuning in today. And don't forget to get your Voitex. Every time you use the Voitex, you're going to save money. It's going to help us earn some money and bring in some more money so that we can do these youth programs that we're doing. We currently have one called from travel intern to travel agent in 90 days. It's designed to help those people in that 18 to 25-year-old category who wants to be able to earn money, to be able to earn a six-figure income by the time that they're 30 years old. And so that's, you know, that's our goal, that's our mission, and we want to be able to accomplish that mission. So with that said, hey, it's my time, it's our time, it's your time.